right, everyone. Well, thanks for joining today's webinar, Psychological Safety, a Precondition for Continuous Improvement. I am Morgan Wright. I'm the Customer Marketing Manager here at Kynexus. I am very happy today to be joined by the one and only Mark Graven as our presenter today. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Morgan. Thanks for hosting today.
Of course, anytime. And if this is your first time joining today, I know I mentioned I work here at Kynexus. Our mission here at Kynexus is to spread continuous improvement. So if you want to learn more, you're curious, please join us at www.kynexus.com or scan the QR code here for more information. And then, of course, for those of you who have been following our last few webinars, we've been doing a lot of awesome book giveaways. So we wanted to announce our three book winners for today for Mark's upcoming book that will be released later this month, titled The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. So congratulations to our three winners, who are Tori Hollingsworth, John Broghammer, and Lisa Rosenbaum. So if you are one of the three, Mark will be reaching out to you via email. And like I mentioned, the book will be released later this month. So you should be receiving the book around then or early July. So remember to enter future webinar-related giveaways, post or repost about one of our webinars on LinkedIn, and use hashtag Kynexus. Congratulations. Okay, so now we can do a little bit of a formal introduction. For those of you who don't know Mark Graven, Mark Graven is an author, speaker, and consultant whose latest book we just talked about, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation, like I mentioned, being released later this month. Huge congratulations, Mark, by the way. That's such an accomplishment. He is, of course, also the author of many other books, including the award-winning book, Lean Hospitals, Improving Quality, Patient Safety, and Employee Engagement, as well as Measures of Success. React Less, Lead Better, and Improve More. He also serves as a consultant through his company, Constancy Incorporated, and is also a senior advisor for Kynexus. And he has his 12-year Kynexiversary coming up later this month. I just hit my second year, so I'm not quite catched up to you yet, but congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
Additionally, Mark also hosts several podcasts, including the Lean Blog Interviews and My Favorite Mistake. Mark earned a BS in Industrial Engineering from Northwestern University, an MS in Mechanical Engineering, and an MBA from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Leader for Global Operations program. So without further ado, I will turn things over to you, Mark, and we'll dive into the impact of psychological safety on a continuous improvement culture.
All right. Thank you, Morgan. Thank you again for hosting today. Thank you, everybody, for being here today to talk about something I've come to understand, I think, better over the past year. I'm going to share some things today I wish I had known 20 years ago. I think really helpful concepts that help us in our journey toward a culture of continuous improvement. That psychological safety is a precondition for continuous improvement. I'm going to share some stories and examples today from different organizations that I hope will be helpful to you and your teams. The slides and more will be available if you go to markgraven.com/Kynexus2023. We'll put that up during the Q&A as well. And then at three different points today, we're going to do some interactive polling. It's anonymous polling. You can join, so if you haven't already, by using your phone or tablet to scan the QR code. Or you can go in any web browser, go to menti.com and enter the code. I'll put this in the chat also, 8416926. And Morgan, maybe if you can put menti.com, put that URL in the chat before and during the polling, those both the QR code and the web address and code will appear on screen. And we'll make sure we share the results of that, not just of what shows live on screen, but that'll be part of what's published and share it out in the follow-up email and notes after the session. So I want to start off by telling a story about a healthcare organization. This could have happened maybe in any type of organization in any industry. They invited me in. They were really excited about what they were doing with lean and continuous improvement. And as we were walking through the hallways of the hospital and visiting different departments, they wanted to show me, they were excited to show me their new huddle boards, as they called them, kind of a whiteboard-based approach to trying to help track improvement. They had gone and visited what was considered at the time to be, you know, a leading lean healthcare organization in the upper Midwest. And they saw huddle boards that were being very actively used. Well, they took pictures of the board. They had dozens, if not 100 boards made and hung all throughout the hospital. And the boards looked like this. So we can see they had copied the board, but what had not come along was the same level of activity as they saw at that other organization. And did my best to, you know, sort of try to ask a constructive, open-ended, maybe challenging question without being overly critical. So how long have these boards been hanging? Hoping the answer was, well, we just put them up yesterday and we're just now working to engage people in using the boards. And the answer, unfortunately, was something like a couple of months ago. And so you might think, well, if you're a Kinexus customer, you might be thinking, well, they should have been using Kinexus instead of some sort of whiteboard. But even as we say at Kinexus, it's not technology that's going to magically help create a culture of continuous improvement. It also requires leadership behaviors and improvement methodology. So we might look and ask some of the same questions if one of our customers had their Kinexus instance with a blank board, right? The challenge here wasn't the technology, it's the pieces that were missing. And we could ask why. We can ask why are the boards not being used, and try to do so in a way that's not blaming the employees and maybe even being careful to not blame frontline managers. We could ask if the word why triggers some defensiveness. We could ask maybe in you know, different format using different words, but the blunt direct question would be why? Why are people not participating, whether it's a bulletin board or a great software platform like Kinexus? It could be, I think, one of two things. Our friend, Professor Ethan Burris at the University of Texas, Austin, has done great research answering the question of why do employees choose to not use their voice in the workplace to speak up about problems or opportunities for improvement. One of the factors, I think not surprising, as he's shown in his research, is a fear factor, where people are afraid of being mocked or ridiculed or marginalized or punished for pointing out problems or opportunities for improvement, for stepping up to share ideas. And when people fear that punishment, it's understandable that they would choose to be quiet. And again, I'm not blaming them for that. We can think about what can we do to reduce fear as leaders. But even if the fear factor is eliminated, what Professor Burris's research has shown, actually the number one factor, slightly higher than the fear factor, it's a different F word, futility factor, where people say, I'm not afraid to speak up. It's just not worth the effort. I could speak up and point out problems, or I could share ideas for improvement. It just doesn't lead to anything. So, why bother? And so we need to work to eliminate both of these barriers to people using their voice in the workplace. And hopefully today I'm going to share some ideas for how to get past both of these. So if we look to Toyota as an example, Jamie Benigni pictured here from Toyota and their TSSC group that does great work with not just suppliers, but nonprofit organizations and healthcare and other areas. Jamie defines the Toyota production system in, I think, a really succinct and effective way. It says, Jamie and Toyota define TPS as an organizational culture of highly engaged people solving problems or innovating to drive performance, right? There's a lot of key points, I think, within that definition. So if we look at the piece around highly engaged people, I think one thing I've learned in my career is that highly engaged people don't just magically develop. Even based on selecting and hiring people who may have a tendency to speak up, if we're not doing things to actively engage people, they're not going to be engaged, right? So it comes back to leader behaviors. What are we doing? What are we not doing? What are we doing to encourage that engagement in a very active way? And are we doing things that would stifle that willingness and that desire to participate? So I think we have to get beyond just trying to tell people that they should be brave or that they should speak up. Sometimes in healthcare, it gets framed a little bit more dramatically. You know, thinking, let's say in a nursing room, you've got a lot of professional hierarchy, people in positions of power. There's this challenge of, let's say, is a nurse or a tech going to speak up and challenge a surgeon if they think there's a mistake that's about to be made or if there's a risk? Sometimes in healthcare, I hear maybe in these exact words or the tone is this of telling people who are not in those positions of power something like, it's your professional obligation to speak up. I'm like, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's effective. Again, if people fear being punished for speaking up, instead of telling them you should be brave, even if that risks losing their job or not getting the choice operating room surgical team assignments anymore, instead of just telling them they should speak up, we need to help make it safe for people to speak up. And one thing that I've come, I think, to understand and believe, you know, in this past year of studying psychological safety, is that speaking up isn't a matter of character or courage. It's a function of culture. And I'd say, you know, when people speak up, we don't want to just kind of, you know, challenge people or try to force them to put themselves at personal or professional risk. We want to make it safe for people to speak up and give them a constructive response. So if we look at Toyota and their Andon Accord process, there were news stories even going back, and I think I linked to this in my notes, and I'll try to make sure I didn't make the mistake of skipping that. You know, at Toyota, this article from the BBC, I think it was like 12 years ago, talked about how Toyota plants in the US and Kentucky and places like that would see workers pulling the Andon Accord a couple thousand times a week. If you've had a chance to tour a Toyota factory, you almost constantly hear the chimes playing and you see the lights flashing because people are pulling the Andon cord and they're getting a good, constructive, helpful response. This BBC news story talked about a Ford truck plant in Michigan that had opened up. They had copied the Andon cord mechanisms. They bought the equipment, they installed them, they put them in place. According to the BBC news article, and I would tend to believe it, having started my career at General Motors in that kind of old non-lean culture, if you will, the cord was being pulled twice a week. And I would suspect it was being pulled twice to test it and make sure it was working. I don't know if those were legitimate Andon cord pulls. So I'm not criticizing the workers at Ford, but if we step back and ask what's required for people to actually take the step to pull the Andon cord, I think there are two pieces, and they both start with PS. It requires a level of psychological safety, and it requires effective problem solving. Not just making it safe to speak up, but making sure that it's effective, eliminating both the fear factor and the futility factor. So before we define psychological safety a little bit more formally, this is something that's out there in the Toyota literature. The book Toyota Culture by Jeff Liker and Mike Hoseas. Mike Hoseas was a direct Toyota employee and leader for quite a few years. But as they describe in the book Toyota Culture, that Toyota believes people must feel psychologically and physically safe. I think it's interesting that they put psychologically first in that sentence. I think as we learn more about psychological safety, we could say that psychological safety leads to better physical safety when people feel safe to point out safety concerns or risks or problems. they must believe that any concerns they have will be taken seriously. So again, I think this points to not just the fear factor, but the futility factor, trying to eliminate that at Toyota and other organizations. So for those of you who are not real familiar with psychological safety, or this is brand new to you, one of the experts in this space is Amy Edmondson, a professor at Harvard Business School, author of great books, including The Fearless Organization. Professor Edmondson defines psychological safety as a belief, right? And this is very individual. So to interject a little bit here, we could use words like perception or feeling. It's individualized, that we have this belief that one will not be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, mistakes, that you feel safe to use your voice in the workplace. Edmondson did some work with Google and what Google called Project Aristotle. You can find information about this online, where Google was asking a fairly open-ended question around what makes certain teams within all of their disparate businesses more successful than others. Of all of the different variables that they identified, the key variable that predicted team success was the level of psychological safety that was felt in those teams. All other things being equal, higher levels of psychological safety will enable us to not just use our voice as employees, but to succeed and to perform better as a team. Another expert I would point to in psychological safety is Timothy Clark, the CEO of an organization, Leader Factor, and the author of another great book called The Four Stages of Psychological Safety. Clark's kind of pithy, succinct definition of psychological safety is a culture of rewarded vulnerability. So let's unpack that. Like, vulnerability is a word that we know and we might use, but what does that mean? What does that mean into the context? So vulnerability, or doing something that we might describe as a vulnerable act, is something that then exposes us to the risk of harm or loss. This could be professionally, this could be personally. So a vulnerable act, again, is not a judgment about us being vulnerable as being good or bad. When we do something that we would hope to be considered positive, like pointing out a problem, pointing out an opportunity for improvement, admitting a mistake, that this wouldn't be highly vulnerable. And if it is vulnerable, it's the, I think, the role of leaders to work on the culture, to work on the environment, to reduce that risk of harm or loss in ways that are demonstrated and felt and believed by the team. Because we can all think about moments at work where there's this internal debate where you say, well, I want to say something. I'm not sure if I should. Are the benefits of speaking up and saying the thing I want to say the way I think I'm going to say it, do the benefits of that outweigh the potential risks? Do I say something or do I keep quiet? And when people feel safe, they're more likely to use their voice and speak up. When they feel fear, or when it's been demonstrated to them that it is dangerous and risky to speak up, they're going to choose to keep quiet. And to me, that's understandable. I'm not blaming somebody who decides to keep quiet in the face of fear of punishment or harm or loss. So we can think about examples of vulnerable acts. I don't know, Morgan, maybe let me put you on the spot here as host. Like, could you share an example of something that people might consider to be a vulnerable act in the workplace?
Yeah, I feel like what comes to my mind is kind of like what you were just talking about, speaking up and maybe giving your thought or opinion in front of a large group, you know, whether it's just your team or, you know, in our case, it's about 35 of us total. So we talk about psychological safety all the time, but it's still this kind of internal battle of being vulnerable enough to do it. So that would probably be my example.
Yeah. Well, that's a great example. And, you know, speaking up to answer that question, you know, is potentially a vulnerable act. Now, I hope you didn't feel too much fear or risk of saying the wrong thing or me scolding you. Oh, that's not right, Morgan. But no, you know, we do talk about psychological safety, but then beyond that, it's the practice of, you know, how we react to people when they do speak up and trying to be constructive about it. So one way that might be less vulnerable, we're not going to be able to open up microphones and ask people if they want to speak up, but this is going to be our first mentee poll. So hopefully that's working for everybody. You can, when you get to the welcome screen, click advance and you can answer this first question of sharing an example of a vulnerable act. And then I think the way this is working, to be able to advance the other questions, even if you just type a space or I don't know, you have to do that to be able to advance to the next questions. So let's see. All right, we already have a bunch coming through. And that QR code's on screen. Walking in the dark, admitting a mental health diagnosis, admitting I made a mistake or a bad decision, speaking up against the norm, identifying a mistake, calling out a serious error committed by a senior leader, pointing out problems, asking for help with workload, revealing personal details about yourself. This is such a great list. And we'll share this with everybody. There's a lot of entries here. I'll just kind of scroll through. Are you seeing those just to double check? Okay, I see thumbs up from people. Admitting you don't know, telling the boss they're not doing something correct, speaking up in front of toxic leaders, indicating you don't understand. So the thing about vulnerable acts is that basically any human interaction is potentially a vulnerable act, depending on the situation and the circumstances. So there really literally are no wrong answers to this question of what's a vulnerable act, as long as what you're typing is an example of human interaction. That's a great list. We'll make sure we export that and share that with everybody. Thank you for sharing those. Because the key question that, you know, that we're asking, even if it's not explicitly so in our heads, do I feel psychologically safe? Should I speak up or should I be quiet? It's not a matter of a simple yes, no, safe, unsafe. It's more a matter of degree of, you know, how safe do I feel? How risky is it to speak up about this thing in these circumstances with these people in this moment? It's very situational. Throughout the day, working with different teams, teams where you know people really well versus a team that you're now meeting with and you don't know the people, you don't feel that same comfort level, which isn't their fault, right? It's just part of the circumstances or the system that you're working in. This is very individual. It's very situational. And if we were to try to ask kind of generally, does a team or does an organization have this feeling of psychological safety, it really comes down to each person decides. Our feeling, our belief, our perception of that level of psychological safety. So the second survey that we're going to do is a bit of a ranking exercise. Of the 10 vulnerable acts listed here, if you can choose and rank your top three, I think this is an interesting exercise. Because I think one lesson that comes through this, and when you do it within a team, we've done this within a team at Kinexus, to illustrate how individual this is, some people might think admitting a mistake is highly vulnerable, and others might not feel that it is. That might be due to differences in their different work experiences. Even before they come in the door to work at your company, if people had been punished for challenging the way things are done, which is currently number one in that ranking right now. If they've been punished in previous workplaces for challenging the status quo, it might take them time to learn that they're not going to be punished for it in this environment. And that's one lesson we've learned at Kinexus. As people are new to the team, we need to help bring them along and try to set expectations about we want it to be safe for people to point out opportunities for improvement, but then ultimately all we can do is demonstrate that to be true Right. So disagreeing with your manager is currently number two on the list. Admitting a mistake is number three. Expressing your emotions is number five. That usually ranks fairly high. And people can continue voting here. And I think the purpose of the survey is not to say, well, you're wrong if you didn't say number one on the list was highly vulnerable to you. It's just meant to provide a little bit of perspective of, because of our situations, because of our histories, even because of our personalities, there are differences in what I feel is highly vulnerable and what Morgan or others would feel to be highly vulnerable. So again, we'll share those results with everybody afterwards. So thank you for voting on that. Because as leaders, and now I want to talk about what we can do to cultivate higher levels of psychological safety. What does not work is saying things like, this is a safe space. Tim Clark uses this phrase. He's like, you cannot use rhetorical reassurances of you should feel safe to speak up. It's for each person to decide. Now, we can talk about encouraging openness and candor. But what's more, I think, practically the steps that we can take as leaders or as coworkers to improve psychological safety. And in that first question, someone kind of alluded to this first part, modeling vulnerable acts. When the leaders are willing to say, I don't know, I might be wrong, I made a mistake, let's test that idea because I'm not certain if it's a good one. That sets a good example for others and is probably more powerful than talking about wanting people to use their voice. So then when leaders lead by example and lead the way, others may test the waters and try to follow. And when they do, after you've been modeling vulnerable acts, the next thing you need to do as leaders is make sure you're rewarding others when they follow your lead. When others say, I don't know, or I could be wrong, or I made a mistake, we need to go beyond not punishing to something that's closer to rewarding them for speaking up so that we can focus on, for example, if someone admits a mistake, we want to shift from a punitive reaction to a reaction that instead allows us to learn and improve and do, for example, some mistake proofing. How do we make these habits happen? Pictured here is Chris Burnham, who's one of the leaders within the Kinexus team. And at our company meeting in July, Chris wasn't the only one to do this, but I managed to snag a picture and he's given me permission to use this, even if it makes him blush a little bit. The format in this review of the last 6 months is to share not just what went well, but quote unquote, what went wrong. And Chris, and I remember Jeff Roussel as our chief revenue officer, in very plain language said, as you see on screen there, I made mistakes. And we don't admit that so that others can mock us or to feel shamed. Or the point is to share the learning from the mistakes. And I think that then leads to a really consistent and positive habit in, let's say, weekly Zoom calls. It's not at all uncommon for somebody on the team to briefly share a mistake they made in the spirit of helping others. Here's a mistake I made. It's a mistake you might make too. Let's be open about it so that we can learn and focus on preventing mistakes. So Chris, as a leader of a team, is modeling that behavior, but he's also being rewarded by leaders, including co-founder and CEO Greg Jacobson. Greg does the same thing of being the first to admit mistakes, to say he doesn't know. Greg is modeling these behaviors, and then he's rewarding it when Jeff and Chris do the same. And Chris and Jeff are modeling and rewarding for the people who work for them. This becomes a really powerful cycle. As Greg says, I quoted him in my book, you can't have a culture of continuous improvement without learning from mistakes. Learning from mistakes is just one driver of improvement. But if we have the level of psychological safety that allows people to feel safe admitting mistakes, I think they're also going to feel safe speaking up proactively about Kaizen opportunities for improvement. Stephanie Hill, who works for Chris, right? So we have Stephanie reporting to Chris, who reports to Greg. Stephanie posted a comment on LinkedIn recently, and she's letting me use this with her permission, where she had shared in response to somebody else's post how she thought she had a pretty significant failure, as she called it. She told people who might want to know, and instead of pointing fingers at me, everyone rallied around me to help right the ship. At no time did they imply I'd done wrong. They focused on the learning. They complimented Stephanie on how she handled the situation and encouraged her to continue trusting people with her mistakes. Like, to me, this is what modeling and rewarding vulnerable acts looks like in a very practical way, in a way that's building Stephanie's individual perception of psychological safety. So again, as leaders, we want to model and reward vulnerable acts. Now, stepping away from Kinexus and Toyota examples, Larry Culp, the CEO of General Electric, is somebody I've admired for a long time. He was previously CEO of Danaher, which a lot of people would consider to be the best North American lean success story outside of Toyota. And he's now changing the culture within GE. He spoke at the AME conference in Dallas last October, and part of what he shared was changing the culture from one that he realized he inherited a culture, as he put it, that shot the messenger for pointing out problems or for bringing bad news up the leadership chain. And as Larry described at the conference, he told his employees, "I want to hear the bad news. I want to hear it facts." So he can encourage this, he can talk about it, but it's followed by action. As Larry said here, the moment of truth was this: when somebody shares bad news, do you shoot the messenger or do you listen, even if you're unhappy, to react in a constructive way that helps build psychological safety? We look at other organizations going on this journey of both higher levels of psychological safety and better problem solving. We ask, well, what would happen if we only had psychological safety, if we were helping people feel safe speaking up about concerns? And I'm not saying this was the case here, but I just want to use as an example of what might be at an organization. Pictured here is a physician and a medical leader at a hospital in Japan that I was able to visit back in 2018. She's been directly coached by Toyota. This hospital is pretty close to Nagoya and Toyota City. She was really proud, and I think rightfully so, as we've seen at American hospitals like Virginia Mason Medical Center, when they've worked on this culture of not literally having an and-on cord, but working to make it safe for people to speak up and point out risks, problems, errors, mistakes, whatever words we might use. You can see in this chart that she showed an increasing number of incident reports at that hospital. We've seen this happen at other hospitals. That's great, but it's, I would say, a good start, right? It's not that the number of incidents is going up, it's the number of reports going up. The number of actual reports might be decreasing, because what we want is the psychological safety and the speaking up to be followed then by effective problem solving, right? We don't want people to feel safe reporting the same mistakes over and over again. That doesn't serve the patient well. That doesn't serve caregivers or the organization well. We need to, again, eliminate not just the fear factor, but the futility factor. We need to combine that feeling of psychological safety with effective problem solving. So when people speak up, we can actually learn from the mistake and put measures in place to prevent it from occurring again. So this is a chart from a North American hospital system that had a similar chart of increasing incident reports. But then here's what really matters, is now seeing the decline in serious safety events. More reporting, more speaking up when people feel safe to speak up means more improvement. We can't solve problems that people don't feel safe reporting. So I think we want to see both charts, increasing reports, decreasing harms or incidents or defects or whatever language we might use in our organization. But even if people are safe to speak up, there's one other element of psychological safety I want to touch on here, where we could, I think we won't be effective if we invest a lot of time and effort into training people on problem solving methodologies without continuing to build psychological safety. Back to this question of, do we feel safe being experimentalists? Do we feel high levels of psychological safety all throughout the PDCA or PDS cycles of plan, do, study, and adjust? It's one thing to feel safe pointing out a problem or an opportunity for improvement. But beyond that, I think we need to ask and try to answer this question. Is it safe to say things like, as we go, do something? Is it safe to say we could be wrong? I think there's a difference in mindset between saying, we're going to go implement that solution versus saying, let's go test the countermeasure. Saying test the countermeasure, it's different words, but I think the mindset implies this cycle of, even if we have a solid hypothesis of a countermeasure that's going to be effective, we could be wrong, or we could be less than completely correct in our hypothesis or assumption. So do we feel safe to say, let's test it and see? You know, can we test a countermeasure on a small scale before blasting it out to the entire organization? And when we test something, as we go through our study and potentially into the adjust phase, do we feel safe to say that countermeasure didn't work as predicted? And can we avoid situations where people feel punished for trying something that just didn't work out as expected? We need to focus on learning and improving and continuing that PDSA cycle fueled by psychological safety instead of being stifled by fear and punishment. So as we want to understand, you know, how safe do people feel, there are ways of measuring psychological safety. Leader Factor has a survey that I'm trained and certified in facilitating. We've done this within Kynexus. If your organization is interested in this, feel free to reach out to me. But we can measure psychological safety by surveying people. We can do it at a real high level, and then we can actually break down the problem, which to me, I think is good lean problem solving. So within Kynexus, this was the result of our team survey of, I think at the time it was about 32 employees. We continue growing and we'll probably resurvey people again this year. The overall score was a 68, where the range of possible results went from negative 100 to positive 100. Kynexus as a team overall across different dimensions measured in the 80th percentile compared to other organizations. I mean, so there's a, I would say, reasonably high level of psychological safety, generally speaking. But again, remember, this doesn't mean everybody across the company feels an equal level of psychological safety. It may vary from team to team and person to person. And our survey actually helped us kind of draw that out at a team level and to spark conversations, even down to an individual level, of what might help you feel more safe in different ways. To progress through what Tim Clark calls in his book, again, The Four Stages of Psychological Safety, walks us through these stages that we tend to progress through. Stage one, the foundation of inclusion safety. Can I be my authentic self? Do I feel included, accepted, and respected? Without a reasonably high level of this feeling of inclusion, it's really difficult to move and progress through the other stages. Stage two, learner safety. Can I learn and grow? Do I feel safe to ask questions? Do I feel safe to say, I don't know? Do I feel safe to admit a mistake? These are different dimensions of stage two, learner safety. Stage three, contributor safety. Can I contribute and create value? Am I given the space to do my work to my peak ability and skill? And then stage four, and I think this is where people are really going to say there's the innovation and continuous improvement frontier. Stage four, challenger safety. Can I be candid about change? Do I feel safe pointing out problems? Do I feel safe sharing ideas? All without the fear of being embarrassed, marginalized, or punished in some way. So we can measure not just this overall high-level perception of psychological safety. We can break down into scores, different questions that ask about these four stages, and even more specific questions related to each of these stages. So as we see, again, at Kynexus, looking at these four stages, inclusion safety was at a 74th percentile. This sparked discussions of, are there things that we can do to help people feel more included, more accepted? Is this a function of some employees being new? And, you know, they're not being excluded, but they haven't been here long enough to feel that level of inclusion and acceptance? Or are there things that we can do to foster that in different ways? Stage two, learner safety was at an 81st percentile. Contributor safety was at a 76th percentile. Stage four, challenger safety. I think it's interesting, even though the absolute score was lower, the percentile was still pretty high. It's more difficult to get a team to a high level of challenger safety. But again, as I think Tim Clark teaches us, there is this necessary progression. A lot of people say, well, we want challenger safety. Let's jump right to focusing on encouraging people to challenge the status quo. Let's model that. Let's reward that. Well, at some point, you have to start with the foundations, inclusion safety, learner safety, and contributor safety to get us towards kind of that pinnacle of challenger safety. So again, to wrap up, and we'll do a survey and we'll have Q&A time. This is something we work on at Kynexus. Even though I think that 80th percentile was pretty good, I appreciate how Kynexus leaders and members of teams have really leaned in to learning about psychological safety, and not just the lingo and the terminology. But you know, I think this it's one of these things that I think to me seems kind of more obvious in hindsight. Well, of course, when we're modeling these vulnerable acts and when we're rewarding them, people will feel more safe and the level of psychological safety will increase. So, you know, it's not just about the scores. Like if we come back and resurvey people this year, I would hope the scores would be higher, kind of reflecting the effort that people are putting into, again, not just talk about psychological safety, but to practice these habits of modeling and rewarding vulnerable acts. That survey mechanism, even if imperfect, would allow us to try to gauge our progress in addition to ongoing conversations that might go on between employees and their leaders on a one-on-one basis or within a team dynamic. That's something that I'll give Kynexus team a lot of credit for. They didn't say, oh, we're at an 80th percentile. There's no gap. There's nothing to work on here, right? There's an opportunity to still strengthen the level of psychological safety that people feel, because we do realize we will succeed at Kynexus when people do feel safe to bring their whole selves to work, to speak up about problems and opportunities for improvement, and to speak up and share ideas. All right, so let's take a look at the last survey here. For everybody to vote on a 1 to 10 scale using the sliders in your browser or on your device. This looks at the four stages at a really high level. Do I feel inclusion safety? Do I feel safe to be myself? Do I feel learner safety? Is it safe to learn? Do we feel contributor safety, where it's safe to contribute to my fullest? And then do I feel challenger safety, where it's safe to challenge the status quo? So we'll see. And the one thing I love about this polling tool is that we're going to see not just the averages, but the distributions across these four elements. And again, I will share the final results with everybody. People can continue voting. This question will remain open as we wrap up and go through announcements and Q&A. So this has become, to me, a fairly predictable pattern of seeing you know, let's say, for example, the current averages, inclusion safety, 6.6, but there's a wide spread, right? We're surveying people from many, many organizations today. The learner safety at an average of 8, the contributor safety at an average of 7.1, and then the challenger safety is the lowest. And again, that's to be expected, unfortunately. That's our biggest gap, our biggest opportunity for improvement. Currently at an average of 5.5, and you can see visually how wide the spread of votes is. It's not quite a perfectly linear distribution, but it's closer to a linear distribution than a bell curve, which is, I think, really interesting to see. So thank you to everybody for sharing that. And please do continue voting. We'll share the results in the follow-up. So to wrap up here before we do some announcements and Q&A, I know this is just a maybe a first introduction or a brief introduction to what I think is a really rich field. There's so much focus in the continuous improvement community on problem solving, and for good reason. But I think, you know, the precondition of what's required for continuous improvement, it's this combination, the two PSs, psychological safety and problem solving. Whether, I don't know if that's a plus or a multiplier, I don't know. But combining these two things, psychological safety and problem solving, this results in highly engaged people who are improving and innovating. So that's the opportunity. That's the challenge. I'll encourage people, let's do it. Let's go do it. Or maybe better yet, let's go PDSA it within our teams, within our organization. I'm not going to call that a mistake, but it's probably better to say let's PDSA it rather than let's go implement it. Maybe everyone we'll take that to heart. So with that, thank you. Before we go into Q&A, Morgan's got a couple of announcements.
Thank you again for that excellent presentation, Mark. I know I already saw it at KinexCon, but I felt like I was gathering different nuggets, even just watching it for a second time. So really, really enjoyed that. I already see a few questions here in the Q&A, but everyone, please continue to submit questions in the Q&A section. But before we jump into that, like Mark said, we have a few closing announcements. So first off, we have some upcoming webinars that you can register for at www.kinexus.com/webinars. So our next webinar, as you can see, is July the 11th, 2023 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, titled Kind Leadership with Karen Ross. Additionally, for Kinexus customers only, we do have a webinar coming up next Wednesday, June 14th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time as well, where our training team will be giving a condensed version of our training session that we had at KinexCon a few weeks ago, titled Optimizing Your Instant. So you can register at the same place on the website. Also, don't forget to check out our webinar recordings library, also available at kinexus.com/webinars, and look for the link in the right sidebar. Remember, it's all free. Mm-hmm. And then don't forget to check out our blog at blog.kinexus.com. So you can subscribe to both our improvement blog and our customer blog when you visit our website if you haven't subscribed already. And finally, we want to invite you to check out our podcast series. So please listen, subscribe, rate, review via your favorite podcast app, or you can find out more at kinexus.com/podcast. Audio from today's webinar will be available there as well. So now it's time for some Q&A. So we have a number of questions here. So we'll start off with the first one. Mm-hmm. Mark, so does creating psychological safety have to start from upper management down? Or can it work from frontline staff up? If so, how?
That's a great question. And I'm going to read, there was a comment to the question from John Broghammer. My experience while at Toyota Financial Services for 10 years has seen the culture of psychological safety starting from the leadership and grows downward. And I would agree with that assessment. Like it's going to generally flow downhill. So maybe I think ideally, you know, you have an organization, I mean, you know, Toyota, there are interesting quotes. Now, former CEO, now chairman, Akio Toyoda, you know, made some statements talking to, you know, young employees that were quoted in the news that people should feel safe. I'm paraphrasing, and it was translated. So, you know, that people should feel safe making and admitting mistakes, because we learn from mistakes at Toyota. You know, so I mean, ideally, you know, at Kinexus, you know, acknowledging we're not perfect. You know, it really starts with Greg as the CEO and Matt as the co-founder, and the other executives. Now, I think in bigger organizations, and this is where you see, let's say the studies at Google, there was variation across business units, right? So they all worked for the same CEO. So the CEO has some effect, but then different leaders at different levels getting closer to the frontline workers probably have a bigger day-to-day effect. You know, so you'd have the CEO doing and saying the right things, but if a local leader is punishing people for speaking up, that team is going to feel a low level of psychological safety. I think it does tend to flow downhill, where I've seen in some organizations, like health system was generally not a culture with high psychological safety, but a departmental director can lead by example within their couple hundred employees and build a subculture that's actually much stronger than the organization as a whole. I think that's possible. But it's just, you know, I think what Tim Clark has found in his research and what he teaches, it really starts with leaders modeling those behaviors and giving encouragement and demonstrating to others that it's okay to speak up in these ways that might be vulnerable. That reduces the level of perceived vulnerability. And then when you reward people who do the same, that keeps the cycle going. I think if you have a team of people that all want to speak up, they're going to quickly learn not to when the manager isn't doing those things that would encourage, that would create the conditions for psychological safety. I think it really does have to go top down. Maybe not from the CEO on down, that would be ideal, but it's got to go from some leader on down.
Yep. I think that's a great answer. Okay, our next question here, kind of based off of the first question. So Arnold says, my question for Kinexus is this: how can a company whose bread and butter is teaching companies how to continuously improve have a psych safety index only in the 80th percentile? If psych safety is so critical to CI, I would expect the CI experts to score in the 90th percentile and above. Yeah. I mean, that's a super fair question. And Mark, if I could just jump in quick, because I've been kind of noodling on this when I saw it come in. And I want to say, just from my personal experience, like Mark shared, we've been talking about psychological safety as a company or within our own teams here for the last year or so. But I believe that since we have grown so much in these last couple of years, and I can speak from my own personal experience, kind of like I shared earlier, sometimes it's this internal struggle of being able to share and admit these mistakes when our whole lives we've been taught, don't make mistakes. And, you know, you may be punished at a previous job or something for making a mistake. So I think even though our leadership is so pro, you know, admit your mistakes and they admit their own mistakes, it's still going to be that constant battle to actually do it. So that's kind of my piece there, Mark. I don't know if you have anything else to add there.
I mean, it's a great question, Arnold. And, you know, I want to thank you for that. I mean, that's a challenging question, and I appreciate that. There's a lot to reflect on there. And I'm glad you felt safe enough to ask it. Look, I mean, I think there's a couple ways of looking at it. I mean, you know, what would the expectation be for an organization? I mean, you could say, well, why do we not score at the 98th percentile? You know, there's a good question there, but you know, I think Kinexus has come through this, I think, in a constructive way of, again, not saying, well, 80% is good enough. Like the survey that we did invited free form responses that we didn't get into today of, like, you know, name one barrier that prevents you from feeling more accepted by your colleagues. Name one barrier that prevents you from feeling safe to challenge the status quo. Those are the improvement opportunities, you know, those nuggets where we're inviting it, you know, for that first time in an anonymous survey. We don't want that to be the only way people speak up and share barriers and concerns. We want that to be happening between an employee and their manager. We want that to be happening within team. So, I mean, we could look at it and say, why is the gap what it is? Or we could sell, I would choose to celebrate the focus and the effort and the hard work that's going into closing the gap. And, you know, we're working there. I mean, maybe when we do that next assessment, we'll hit 90th percentile or something higher, but, you know, it's part of our journey as a high growth company to create this culture in really dynamic circumstances of lots of new people coming in, lots of challenges, lots of things going on. I think going through this challenge will help us be able to serve our customers better.
Yeah. And I think that culture definitely takes time, but great answer.
Yeah.
A great question, I should say. Okay. Our next question here is from Carlo. They ask, when hosting a Kaizen, the culture isn't always psychologically safe ongoing. So besides targeted questions to draw in individuals, is there anything else that can be done to foster safety as early as possible?
Yeah. There's a lot that can be done. And I'm actually going to jump. I had scrolled through. There was another question here from Luis. So let me combine these. So Luis said, most organizations like to start their CI journey with 5S. And I'm going to pull up here are a couple of slides that I skipped. How often do we hear this? I hear it a lot. Always start with 5S. And Luis said, I agree that psychological safety to be the true start or precondition. Maybe I shouldn't have skipped these slides, but thank you for allowing me to bring it up, Luis. I'm proposing always start with psychological safety, which is not mandating thou shalt feel safe. It's starting with psychological safety by understanding how important it is. Try to understand our baseline perceptions of psychological safety or lack thereof. You know, Luis asked, you know, what can we, or I think the next question is what can we do about that? Spending time at the beginning of the Kaizen event to think about stage one inclusion safety. You are building psychological safety within that Kaizen event team. If people do not first feel included, accepted, and respected, it's going to be hard for them to really put their all into the Kaizen event. Of stage two learner safety, if it's their first Kaizen event, there's a lot of learning that's going to take place. Then stage three, contributing to the Kaizen event. And then stage four, challenging the status quo of how our work is being done. What are we improving in the Kaizen event? And challenging the status quo of how we're doing the Kaizen event. You know, if I'm going to pick on my friend, Chris Burnham, again, who I know is in the audience today, if, you know, Chris is running a great Kaizen event, and I might feel safe to speak up and say, Chris, I know we're facilitating it this way, but I think we should maybe try doing it this way. That would be an example of challenging the status quo within a team that's challenging the status quo around improvement. I know Chris would reward that vulnerable act of speaking up and making a suggestion. So, you know, it's probably easier to do effective Kaizen events when the foundation of psychological safety is generally high within the team. The other part of Luis's question, do you have examples or data that correlates psychological safety with successful CI organizations? I think we can point to Toyota. I don't know what their scores on a psychological safety survey would be, but it seems like they would be quite high. But I would also guarantee you, they're not perfect. There are probably moments somewhere within Toyota Global today where sadly someone is being punished for speaking up, right? So we want to identify the gap between, you know, ideal behaviors and what's actually happening. Cultivating that culture of psychological safety, it's really kind of an ongoing challenge. But I would believe a hypothesis, I think, that a lot of the Amy Edmondson and Tim Clark research points to, that teams with higher levels of psychological safety will outperform those that don't, all of the things being equal. So let's go, I don't know, let's go test that hypothesis. I'd love to hear people's reports back about how that's going. So I know I was talking a lot here. There are a lot of questions we didn't get to. I will, before we wrap up, Morgan, commit to going through and maybe record a bonus video or type up something to address these other questions. Thank you to everybody for asking those. And Arnold, thank you for closing the loop here. I see a comment here. Great answers. Thank you. Thank you again you know, that was really a thought-provoking, challenging question. Thank you for that. So with that, Morgan, I guess we can go ahead and wrap up.
Well, thanks again for everyone for joining us today and taking this hour to learn and to ask questions. So like Mark mentioned, we will film a additional video where we will wrap up and answer the rest of the Q&A. But thank you again, and everybody have a great week.
Okay. Thanks again for hosting, Morgan. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Really appreciate it.